Welcome to the second sermon in our sermon series entitled, Follow Me. Jesus calls us to follow Him. In this series, we will count the cost of following Jesus, entering a life of discipleship, and learning to disciple others. Open your Bible to Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. And let's begin.
So I've been seeing these videos, and maybe you've seen them as well, for this new idea called Master's Class. And what it is it's an online learning class that you pay for to learn from the very best of the best in all of these different fields. I actually have a little video clip to show you what it looks like. There's so many good ones that I want to watch. I can't even take it. I don't even have the time. But it's interesting because here's how they describe it. Everyone should have access to the world's greatest minds. That is the founding idea behind Masterclass, where renowned instructors like Gordon Ramsay, Shonda Rhimes, Steph Curry teach online classes that inspire, educate, and transform our students' lives. And what's so interesting is they really have like the best of the best in all of these different fields. They have actors and producers and writers, authors, athletes, chefs, musicians, business owners, photographers, magicians, game designers, comedians, all teaching you their craft and what they've learned and all this experience that they've gained along the way. Now, I love the idea because what happens is you get access to these incredible people that, look, I'm probably just never going to meet in my entire life, right? Like maybe a random happy circumstance I might cross paths, but I'm never going to spend time with these people, but I have an avenue where I can learn from them and this life experience they've accumulated and these things that they've learned. And what's cool is we live in such a really wonderful, specific, cool time where we have access to do these kind of things. I mean, we've got YouTube and TED Talks and podcasts. And we have all of this information and these incredible speakers and these incredible professionals that we have access to. There was a recent survey done by the Pew Research Center, and they said 73% of Americans consider themselves lifelong learners. And when they broke it out, they said about 74% of the adults who participated in the study said they did at least one activity in the last year that advanced their knowledge in something that personally was interesting to them. And then they said there was about 63% of people who took a course, took some kind of training at work. Now what happens is there's all of this information and all of these things to learn from and grow from, but what's interesting is we have different ways of learning. We all process knowledge and learn in different ways. And maybe you've heard some of these ideas before. Some of us are visual learners, right? Like we like to see pictures and we got to see something in front of us that helps make it make sense and draw something around it, images, ideas to it. Some of us listen through, we learn through listening. It's the auditory side of it. We have to hear it to understand it, the sound, the music of it all. Some of us are verbal learners, right? Like we get the words, the speech, the writing, we can hear it, we can process it, we can understand it. Some of us are physical learners, right? Like we have to have our hands on it. We got to be like in it, nitty gritty, use our senses to kind of understand it. But then even beyond that, some of us are logical thinkers. We like to use logic and reasoning and systems to help us process ideas, where some of us are social learners. Have you ever been at a table or in a group of people and you're talking about ideas and you start thinking of things you've never thought of before and you have ideas that you never would have had on your own and you do better in a social setting? Where for others, some people are like, put them in a quiet room, get everybody away, give them some space and some time, and man, they can like solve the world's problems. They love kind of that solitary idea. So we have all this access to knowledge and information and all these different ways to learn. And what's so cool about it is we have this incredible opportunity, each and every one of us, to challenge ourselves to learn something new. We have all of the resources available to us and the different ways of learning to fit where we are and how we learn to really grow and develop ourselves in ways that we've never done before. And that's really what I want us to think about and kind of dig in today as we study some ideas together. This is what Paul said in his letter to the church in Philippi. He said, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Now, it's interesting because Paul is writing this letter to a church that was set in Philippi, and it was a place that he'd spend some time in. You can actually read about his experience there in the book of Acts. And what happens is he is on a journey with some guys. He takes Luke and Timothy and Silas with him. They show up in Macedonia, where Philippi is, and he has this practice. Paul would go to a new city. He'd look for a synagogue there, and he'd start talking to people. But when he shows up in Philippi, there's no synagogue. And he just finds a group of women who are out praying by the river. So he starts talking to them, meeting them, learning from them, and sharing Christ with them. And he meets a woman named Lydia, who's this very wealthy business owner. She invites them back to their home. It kind of becomes like the meeting place for the church in Philippi. And they spend some time together studying Christ, learning and growing. But Paul also meets this slave girl, and he kind of, in a very annoyance way, helps her. She's been exploited and oppressed, and he helps her, and it actually ends him and Silas up in jail. While he's in jail, he has this encounter with the guy who's in charge of the jail there, and he meets Christ, and his family meets Christ, and they all get baptized. And so this church in Philippi is founded with these relationships that Paul builds while he's there. These people that he spent time with and shares Christ with and teaches, and then he moves on and keeps going, but there's a founded church there that takes what they've learned and what they've heard about Christ and starts teaching it to other people. So when Paul writes this letter, he's writing it to people he knows, people he spent time with, people he's done life with and experienced like hardship with and seen incredible things happen. He actually starts chapter 4 by saying, "My brothers and sisters, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm thus in the Lord, my beloved." Paul deeply cares for these people that he's writing to. And he says, as you are thinking about life and the things that you're doing, there's a couple things that I really, really want to remind you of. He said, here are some things that you should be thinking about, because when you do and you think about them, they help you do life in healthy and wonderful ways. And he reminds him, like, remember all the things that you learned from me and you saw and you heard and you received when we were together. Like, I want you to practice those things. I want you not just to hear them, but I want you to practice them and do something with them. Now, there's an interesting idea about knowledge, and maybe you already know this, right? Like, knowing something and understanding it are not the same thing at all. This is what Matt Zollerseit said in an article. He said, "I believe there is a difference between knowing something and understanding it. You know how you'll try to communicate something very important to you to another person, and sometimes they wave you off with an impatient, what do they say? I know, right? I know. And that's knowing. I got the gist. I filed it away. I don't need to think about it again. Knowing is comprehension, but understanding is deeper because it comes from empathy or identification. What happens is knowing and understanding aren't the same. We can know something without it having any effect on our life. We can know something without doing anything about it. So understanding is a little bit deeper. It's comprehending it. It's taking it in. It's embracing it and making it part of your life. It is grasping like how important it is and the meaning of it and why it's significant to you. So if you think about your life, for example, right? Like, I know eating healthy is important, right? Like, you don't have to give me the statistics. I don't need any of the details. I don't need the facts. I know that it matters, but it doesn't mean that I want to, right? Like, when I have options before me, I know what I know, but I want what I want. They don't necessarily mean the same thing. Or I know if I go too fast, I'm going to get a speeding ticket. That's just basic. We know this, right? But it doesn't stop us from going too fast, does it? We go too fast trying to hope we don't get the speeding ticket. Or I know how incredibly important math is. I know it is a foundation. I know that it empowers a lot of the technology that we use. But it doesn't mean that you can open up a geometry book or an algebra book or talk to me about any of that stuff and I'm going to understand it. I'm going to nod and say yes and say, I know, I know. And I'm not going to do anything with it, right? I know it's important, but it doesn't have any of, like, I don't use it. I don't do anything with it. But the same is true, right? Like, I know what the right thing is to do. But there's a difference between knowing what's right and actually doing it. I know what right things are, but it doesn't mean I always live them. It doesn't mean that I always have a heart to do the things that I know are right. There's a difference. We can know something without ever doing it or using it in our life. And what Paul's kind of really leaning into is here is, look, how we do this starts with our thinking. What we think about directs what happens next. And he says, you know, how are we thinking? Let me give you a list of some really good things that you can think about. How we think influences us in incredible ways. This is what an article in Psychology Today said. said the conversations you have with yourself have a direct impact on how you feel and how you behave. If your self-talk is filled with doubt, harsh criticisms, and catastrophic predictions, you will struggle to reach your goals. But you don't have to let a pessimistic outlook or foreboding inner monologue hold you back. You can train your brain to think differently. Here's what happens. We have thoughts come up into our head, and we think negatively, or we have these like bad ideas, or we think something terrible is going to happen, and then we have like this will never work ideas, and our brain thinks certain ways, and some of them we've never questioned. We've never stopped ourselves and said, man, should I be thinking that? Is that healthy? Is that helpful? Is that right? And so what happens is we have these abilities to train our brain to think differently. We have the ability to do something instead of just accepting every thought that passes through our mind as gospel truth. We get to put up some filters and some stopgaps, and it starts with, how am I thinking right now? So I'm going to give you a couple of ideas from this article that are ways that we can train our brain to think different. The first idea they say is you can reframe your unhelpful thoughts. So when we start considering, like, okay, what am I thinking about? The first thing I have to say is, look, I have very unhelpful thoughts that pop up into my head. We all do, right? Things like, this is never going to work, right? That's the first thing that comes into my head. Or things like, I'm such an idiot. I messed it all up. What was I thinking? Stupid, right? Like, nobody can call us meaner names than we call ourselves in our own heads and in our own thinking. And what happens is these thoughts aren't helpful because they are negative predictions. And what's what happens? They turn into self-fulfilling prophecies, right? So we have this exaggerated negative thought, and it prevents us from taking any positive action. So we say, this is never going to work. And then we spend all of this time thinking about all of the reasons and all of the whys that it's never going to work, and then it never works. And we're like, well, I knew it. I was right. I called it all along, right? But the good news is, they said, you can actually reply to these unhelpful thoughts in your mind with realistic statements. Okay. So when your head comes in and you say, oh, I'm such a jerk, I messed it all up, you can stop yourself and say, okay, I might have messed something up, but I didn't mess everything up, right? Or I might not get this right, but I've gotten other things right somewhere along the way, and you can remind yourself of something else that you got right. When you have that thought that pops into your head, this is never going to work, it's impossible, you can reply with, okay, it might be hard, but let's try and think creatively about why or some reasons it might work. Instead of thinking like this is a disaster, it's terrible, it says look for evidence that your efforts may be a success and then create a more balanced statement. So instead say, there's a chance this won't work, but there's also a chance I might succeed. And what happens is you get to reframe these unhelpful thoughts that bubble up into your mind. And then this is my favorite. They said, prove yourself wrong. So when your brain lies to you, which sometimes it does, right? Like, I can't do any more. I'm done. I've got nothing left. I can't do anything else about it, right? Like, I'll never get that promotion. I couldn't possibly lose 10 pounds. I could never eat that way. When that happens, challenge yourself to prove yourself wrong. And of course, they use an exercise example, which is not my favorite, but we know that it's true. Like, you're doing something, right? Like, you go for a walk and you're like, okay, I can't take one more step. Or you're jogging. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. There's no more I can do. Or you're doing push-ups or whatever your exercise is, they're like, challenge yourself to do one more. Okay, you say you can't do one more, but try. What would happen if you went 100 more feet? Or what would happen if you did like one or two more repetitions? What happens is when you do things like this, you challenge yourself, you prove to yourself, I was wrong. I could do more because I did. And the more you do that, the more consistently you prove your negative predictions wrong. It says you train your brain to see yourself in a different light. If I could do one more of those, why couldn't I do this, right? If I could push through that thing, why couldn't I push through this? And then here's the last suggestion I gave. It said, create a personal mantra. What happens is we say negative stuff to ourselves all of the time, and we accept them as truth, right? I could never do this. I could never do that. I'm never good enough for this. We have all of these negative ideas that we filter into ourselves. But what if we did something different? What if we came up with a sentence that says, I am strong, and we said it to ourselves again and again and again? So the next time we want to quit and we want to give up and it's too hard, we say, I'm strong, I'm strong, I'm strong, and we try again. Or we say, I'm courageous, or I'm delightful, or I am the daughter of an awesome God, right? Like, we have these sentences that we tell ourselves to replace the negative things that we're constantly telling ourselves again. So we repeat these things, right? Like, I can persist, I can make it happen, I can be strong. I can do this. It turns the negativity around and helps us start to believe in those statements because we say them again and again. So what happens is when we retrain ourselves and we make our brain start working differently, we've got all of these spaces to start thinking about different things. When we start pushing aside the negative junk that clutters up our minds and our thoughts, we have all of this space that says, what can I think about instead? So instead of having the negative thing, I've got these ideas to retrain my brain to think differently. Now, what are right things I can be thinking about that's going to help me grow and learn and become the person that Christ called us to be? And Paul gives us some ideas. He said, let me give you some things that are going to help you when you think about them. He says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, lovely, commendable, anything excellent or worthy of praise, when we think about these things, we help ourselves. These are healthy thoughts that we can put into our mind to help us think about life differently. They're filters. We get to filter through. Not everything that comes through my mind is something I should think about. Not everything that pops into my head should have space there. Instead, I can use these ideas to filter through what I'm thinking about and think my way forward in a different way. We can question ourselves. Instead of just letting every random idea drift through our minds, we can stop ourselves and say, let's start with truth. Is this true? Right? Like, I might be thinking it, I might feel it, but is it true? And then we get to use that filter to process through what we're thinking right now. So when I stop myself and say, okay, what's true right now is that I'm tired, not that they're a terrible person, right? What's true right now is I'm grouchy, not that the world is out to get me. Because sometimes it feels that way, right? But instead, I get to say, I'm grouchy right now, which means I'm processing things through a grouchy filter. Instead, we get to say, okay, what's true? How can I look at things through the lens of truth? And then it helps us process our thoughts in a different way. And we can do the same thing with honorable and just, right? It's another filter we can use to say, am I thinking honorable things? Is what I'm thinking right? I know it feels right, and I know I've always accepted it as right, but why? What do I have to support that? What can I back it up with, right? What can I make an argument based on this because it's true or it's just or it's right? What noble things am I spending my time thinking about? Because what happens is our thoughts guide us. They direct our choices and our actions. And if I don't think about noble things, I don't make noble choices. If I don't spend time in honorable thoughts and filling my mind with these things, it's not going to express itself in the choices that I make every single day. And so we get to challenge ourselves in this way instead of just accepting things as the way they are, right? We get to say, is this right? Should I be thinking about this or should I not? We get to say, is this the very best I can think of somebody else? Yes, I know they're horrible, they're a jerk, I don't spend time with them, but is that really the best I can think of them? Is that the best I can think of this situation? Or is there a more honorable way that I could require myself to think of these things? What if we thought them as a standard we set for ourselves? You know, we have all kinds of standards for other people, right? Like, they have to do this, and they should never do that, and I hate when they do this, and I hate when they do that. But what if we created a standard for ourselves in our own minds? In my mind, I say, I don't care what anybody else is doing. I don't care what anybody else is saying. I don't care what anybody else is thinking. I have this personal standard for my thoughts that I'm holding myself to. I have a standard of accountability that I'm not going to let myself dip there or go here, and not just anything goes. I've got filters in my thoughts that I want to think about some things and get rid of others, that I want to have a standard of nobility, of excellence in my mind, because we create the world we live in, and it starts in our thoughts. Because what we think about creates the world around us, right? Like, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we think they are. And what happens is, if we don't ever challenge our thoughts, we just accept things as they are. But Christ has called us to so much more. I mean, the life Christ called us to live when we follow him is so much more than just mediocrity and subpar acceptance. It's challenging and it's questioning and it's pushing and it's growing and it's learning. It's saying, I can think about things that are pure and lovely and just and right, because when I spend time there, my actions follow through what I'm thinking about. I made a decision a long time ago that I'm not going to watch scary movies. I realized I was an adult and I didn't have to do it anymore, even though everybody else was, because I hate the images that it puts into my mind. I hate the hard, scary, violent ideas that it puts into my thinking, because they pop up when I don't want them to pop up, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm convinced somebody's breaking in to kill me, right? I don't need more help in those thoughts. They come naturally enough. There's enough hard, ugly, dark things that I don't need to fill my mind with them. I want to fill my mind with light and good and right thoughts. And I get to choose, we all get to choose what goes into our mind that we dwell on and we think about and we spend time with. We get to challenge ourselves and say, okay, I might think that, but is it true? Is it right? Why do I believe that? If I had to say, right, like we do this with faith all of the time. We have these ideas we've accepted and we've picked up and we've pieced them together and we accept them as gospel truth. But then we say, okay, why? What do I have to support that with? Where did that come from? Who told me that? Where is it actually true? And we challenge ourselves in how we think. We think about things that aren't just related to us. That's what commendable is, right? Like I don't have to spend all of my thought life spending on myself. I can spend some of it, but what if I spent some of my time thinking about others, thinking about how to help others and encourage them and teach them and challenge them to grow as well? So when it comes to the ideas of what we're thinking about, we start with, when was the last time I learned something new? When's the last time that I spent time challenging myself to think about things in a different way that grow us, that make us better, that change who we are right now? Or when's the last time I spent any time thinking about something that helps make somebody else better, that helps me be an asset to the people that are around me? Not just somebody who consumes everything that I find, but somebody that actually gives back to somebody else and makes a difference in their life as well. I mean, when's the last time we just really challenged ourselves to think and grow and make something more excellent, right? Like I'm saying, I want this church to be excellent. What can I do to help? I want my home to be excellent. What can I do to make it grow? I want my community to be better. How can I influence it in excellent and right ways? And it all starts with our thinking, because what we think about directs what we learn, and what we learn affects what we understand and absorb and take as part of our life. What we understand becomes who we are and has a huge effect on what we do. Charles Swindoll said this. He said, "The secret of living a life of excellence is merely a matter of thinking thoughts of excellence. Really, it's a matter of programming our minds with the kind of information that will set us free." If we want to live excellent lives, if we want to live lives that make a difference and do something with these awesome, wonderful chances that we have, it starts with what we think about, what we put into our mind to dwell on. And following Christ, remember, it all starts with that, yes, I want to follow him. I want to go where you're going. I want to be part of what you're doing. And we follow where he leads. But it continues in our daily lives by the choices that we make on how we do life. How we think, what we do, all shows how we're following Christ. Which means we have to push what we're thinking about, but we also have to question, who are we learning from? Because there are a lot of options of people that we can give our attention and our time and our energy to, and they can have an influence on us, whether we're thinking we're giving it or not. They affect who we are based on the time that we spend with them. Paul said, "What you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things." See, we learn by watching people, right? Like we see people who are on Instagram, and whether we know it or not, we're giving influence to our lives because we watch what they do, or we see celebrities or athletes or our friends, our families, the people we spend time with, they influence who we are because we watch them do life and we absorb it into who we are and how we do life. See, Paul said, look, he met Christ and it changed everything for him. He went from being a guy who hated Christians to going out and sharing Christ with anybody who would stop long enough that he could talk and get some words out. He went from a guy trying to destroy the church to being one of the biggest key starters to getting the word of Christ out into the world and starting up churches in all of these cities that he visited. He spent time with people in Philippi, and a church started there, and it grew, and it taught people how awesome and wonderful Christ is. Paul was always investing in people around him. Look, he spent time with Timothy, and Timothy went on to go grow a church. And he spent time with Silas, and he invested in them, and he discipled them, and he grew them. And they took what they learned about Christ and about life, and they went out and they shared that with other people. And that's how they grew, and the church grew around them. We all need people in our life that we can learn from. We all need intentional people in our life that we can learn from. Not just the people we're watching on TV that we're thinking that's how life should be, but real life people doing life next to us that we can work our way through everything that we experience in life. A place where we can ask really hard, tough questions, or we can be a hot mess and vomit life all over them, right? With zero judgment because they just let us vomit. We need people in our life that we can bump into, and they can challenge us and encourage us, and they can say, like, wait, you are way off course. What are you thinking, right? We need people who can lean into our lives and speak truth and model faith and hope and courage and love. We need an openness of heart that says, I am never at a point where I have nothing to learn. It doesn't matter how old we are. It doesn't matter how much university we have behind us. It doesn't matter how much job experience we have, how many ladders of success we've climbed. Every single one of us needs an openness of heart that says, I have something to learn. I can learn from the people who are around me, and there's never going to be a point where I can't learn from somebody else. There's never going to be a place in my life where just, okay, I've got it. I'm good. I've got nothing else to do, right? From now until our very last breath, we have more to learn, which means we all have to very specifically ask, who is in our life that we're learning from? Who's mentoring us? Who's helping to disciple us so that we can grow and we can see life differently? Who can I pick that I could ask to spend time with so that we can do life together? Eric Greitens read this book called Resilience, and he gives a really couple of cool ideas about looking for a model and some suggestions on how to do it. So the first idea he said is find a model and do as they do. He uses this quote from Otto von Bismarck, who said, any fool can learn from his mistakes, but the wise man learns from the mistakes of others. Look, I don't have to make every mistake in the book. Some people have already made it, and I can just spend time around them and learn what I don't want to do, right? Like, that's a great starting point for us. But he said there are things in life that we're going to face that we've never gone through before, right? We have really hard decisions to make or hard choices that we're up against, and we have no context, we have no history, and know how to do it. And what happens is we can get around other people, we can find models who've been where we've been, and we can learn from how they face those decisions. We can learn from what they think they did right or what they wish they could have done different or what they said they would never do again. We can learn from them as we face some of these things together. We can say, other people have had to deal with this. I don't have to start from scratch. Who can I learn from that's been this way before? I mean, if we're going to lead excellent lives, we get around excellent people and learn from them and their wisdom and their guidance. If we want to be more courageous, we get around courageous people and see how they made hard choices and overcame fear. We grow in these virtues that we aspire to by observing how people who are living them out made daily choices to do just that exact thing. Now, look, what we're not saying is I want to be them, right? Like, I'm not trying to copy every mannerism, every I'm not trying to absorb them. I'm trying to learn from them and make it work in my own life that we're doing. So we find a model and we start learning from what they do. But then the second thing he says is the model can be living or they can be dead. They can be somebody you know or somebody you've never met. I mean, we really live at this incredible time where we have access to so many options and ideas. I can learn from Augustine by reading what he's written. He's been gone way longer than I can count, but I can still learn from him and how he met Christ and how he came to this incredible life of faith and how he helped form the early thoughts of the church. I can read C.S. Lewis, who is also gone, but he was brilliant thinking about Christ and life and faith, and I can learn from him and follow some of the things that he said. I mean, we have access to all of recorded history. We can pick somebody that we want to learn from and grow from them. We can read stories of tragedy and success, and we can read biographies of people's lives that give us insight in how they learned and how they lived. And it teaches us to think about things in a way we never would have thought of on our own. But once we start thinking about it, we can't unthink it, and we can start absorbing it into who we are. We have literature and history and philosophy and these incredible resources that help us exercise the minds God gave us to think about life and think about who we are in different ways. I mean, you can just go on, and any brilliant speaker or pastor or leader that you want to listen to, they're there somewhere. I listened to a man named Irwin McManus. He teaches this incredible church in Hollywood, California, and he's brilliant, and he's vibrant, and he's got a heart and a passion for Jesus Christ. I love listening to him preach. I listened to an incredible podcast this week. It was an interview with Horst Schulze, and he's the man who founded the Ritz-Carlton. I'm never going to meet Horst Schulze in my entire life, but I got to spend 45 minutes listening to his brilliant insight and the way he's taught people to lead in his organization and how he's raised up these people and his staff, and it's incredible, this organization that he's built. And it helps me think about leading in business in a different kind of way. We can choose models who are right next to us and people that we can do life with. We should have somebody we know mentoring us. But we also have access to all kinds of other people, whether they are alive or dead, next to us or far apart, that we can learn and we can grow from as well. He said, models offer hope. So the best thing we can learn from models is we aren't alone. Somebody else has experienced the struggle. Somebody else has been where I am, and they've gotten through. Another person has gone through what I've gone through, and this is what their journey looked like. This is how they got to the other end, right? This is how they got through what they were going through. And what happens is we get to see what others have done and ask ourselves, okay, if they could do that, what might I do? If they could overcome that, what might I overcome? Man, if they could think that brilliant idea, how could I think through my way through this? And what creative ideas could we see our way through? And what we see is options. I mean, sometimes we're so lost in the mess of life and problems and hardships that it does seem impossible. It seems like there is no way out, but when we learn from other people and models and mentors, what seems like an impossibility to us, they did. And it gives us this glimmer of hope that it's an option of possibility of what might be. It says models offer practical wisdom, right? Nobody can speak to you right where you're at like somebody who's been where you are. And there are times in our life where we need to hear certain things, right? And other times where we need to hear others. Depending where we are in our life, we need somebody who's been where we are and can help us work our way through with wisdom and encouragement what it is that we're going through. And here's his last idea that I don't want us to miss. It's really, really good. He said, models are heroes, not idols. We have a really bad tendency of putting people up on pedestals, right? People who are in a position of authority, or people who are in a position of power, or people who are in a position of celebrity, and we think, oh my gosh, they're great, and they've made all this money, or they say so many smart things, or they wrote all these great books, and somehow we make them these perfect, infallible people who never mess up. And then something bad happens and it comes crashing down and we realize they are as human as we are, right? Like they have just as much capability of messing up as we do. Nobody is perfect. He says the most courageous and brilliant people the world has ever produced are still human and still have struggles. And this matters because we don't want to set ourselves or the people that we're learning from up for failure. Because when we find out they're not perfect but human, we can be tempted to dismiss everything that they've ever said. We can be tempted to dismiss everything that is heroic about them. He says, why should we try? If they messed up, I have no chance either. So what happens is we have to have a right understanding. We need models who are human just like us. They are not perfect, but nor do we expect them to be. Because he said, flawed heroes are still heroic. Our heroes are flawed, but so are we. We have limitations and we have struggles. Nobody is perfect. So what happens is we can admire and we can learn from them without ignoring their mess ups or their mistakes, or even having giant red flags that say, if that could happen to that brilliant of a person, it could happen to me too. What do I do to protect myself from making that same bad decision? How do I protect my life, my family, my organization from falling into that same trap? How do I create health in a different way? Our goal is seeking good examples, not making people on these pedestals as if they are perfect and never do anything wrong. And we get to learn from them and grow and develop heroic and awesome lives. So what if we thought about this as a second? I want us to think about this in two ways. What if we thought about this as a church? What if we thought, man, we get to help each other in this? That's why God gave us the church, that we could be a place that bumps into each other and learns from each other and grow from each other. What if we looked at it as, who can I spend time with that's going to help me and disciple me think about God better and grow in my faith? Who could I partner up with that maybe has a little bit more life experience under their belt and they can show me how they got through what they got through to get where they are? Who can I mentor with that's maybe starting something like I'm trying to start something and they can help me through the ups and downs of what it looks like to start something from scratch? I'm a mom trying to be a better mom. Who are more moms I could be around that have learned and they've worked their way through with kids and what they're trying to accomplish and what they're trying to do? So what if as a church we said, how can we partner up with each other? Who could we look for in life groups and ministry teams and one-on-ones that we can learn from each other and grow from each other? But what if we looked at it as the other side? What if we looked at it as, God's done a lot in my life. Who could I lean into and disciple them? Who could I spend time with? What group could I be a part of? What could I start that could teach somebody else how to keep going and not give up, and what faith looks like in the good and the bad, and families and businesses and relationships and communities? What if we also looked back and said, who could I be doing this for? Who could I be doing this with? Some of us have a lot of life experience that we could be a model, a mentor to somebody else, and help disciple them in the way that God put somebody in our life to help disciple us. We've walked through incredibly hard moments of life, and God saw us through, and we could lean into somebody else and give them hope. We could make an investment in them and say, man, it's not done yet. God's still working. What's going to happen next? And give them the hope to keep on going. And here's what I don't want to miss. Listen to what Paul wraps this all up with. Because when we practice these things and work on these things together, he says, the God of peace will be with you. He reminds us that we are not in this alone, because God is with us. And God is the God of peace, the one making it all right and fitting things together and making them whole. He's the God who fills in our gaps, and he wants us to learn, and he wants us to grow, and he's with us, helping us, teaching us, encouraging us, putting us in the right places to learn and grow from each other. But it all starts with, what am I thinking about? What thoughts am I letting take up space in my mind? Who am I learning from? Who am I setting up as the people that can help me get to where I want to be, not hold me back and pull me away? And how much am I relying on God to fill in the gaps and call us to be the men and women, the champions he's created us to be? Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would help. I pray that you would take these incredible, lofty, good ideas, and that, Father, we wouldn't just know them, but we would understand them. I pray that you would help us to just dwell on them, to spend some time thinking about things that are right and good and just and pure and true. I pray, Father, as we think about the right things, you would put us in the path of the right people, that we might create the kind of relationships where we help each other grow, where we do life with the life in the kind of way that builds up the name of Christ in all that we do. Help us, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on Christ Church, please check us out on the web at www.christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, please contact us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.